And I tell my officers, I have your back. And I hope that every one of them knows that. They've been shown that. There's not a greater feeling in the world than when your boss has your back.
Woof, woof.
And there's not a worse feeling in the world when your boss doesn't.
Firehouse Vigilance presents The Weekly Scrap, a podcast dedicated to the never-ending fight against complacency.
Corley Moore, Firehouse Vigilance. It is Weekly Scrap number 239, joined on this episode by Dr. Candace Ashby. She is a career firefighter with over 34 years of fire service experience and is currently battalion chief with the Indianapolis Fire Department. Her educational background includes a doctorate of management in organizational leadership. She is president of Key Fire Investigations and Elite Public Safety Consulting. Dr. Ashby enjoys making a positive impact in the fire service through coaching, mentoring, and leading positive change. I have never had the opportunity to take her class myself. We're always teaching at the same time, but over and over and over from people I respect, when she's not around, they say, best leadership class I've ever taken, best leadership class I've ever taken. So I'm super excited for tonight's show, to say the least. One of the most requested guests ever for the Scrap, and we finally made it happen. So it's my absolute pleasure to have you on as the guest of Weekly Scrap number 239. Welcome to the Scrap, Chief Ashby.
Oh, thank you, Chief. I appreciate it.
And is it Dr. Chief?
It's whatever you want it to be.
Fair enough. I've had a few doctors on, like Eric Sailors, one of my favorite people out of California. He's a doctor, and he says, you can have Dr. Sailors, or you can have Eric the Viking. So whichever one you want. So it's kind of funny.
I go by anything.
We got Candace the Viking also today.
There you go.
Is there anything I missed in the intro? Anything you would like to add?
No. The only thing before we get started that I got to add is that my opinions are mine, and not that of any of my employers. So now that I got that disclaimer out of the way, I think we're ready to roll.
Get the disclaimer going. Absolutely. Yeah. Okay. All that being said, let's do those beautiful sponsors, which is the thing I had messed up. Sam is having his internet issues. He's kind of in the background, but he's not running everything and making it run smooth. So you got me running things. You got my allergies absolutely wrecking me. So I got the glasses rocking. Sorry to put you on the spot, but I did fix it. Okay, let's go. Beautiful sponsors, Affordable Drill Towers, on a mission to bring you the cost-effective and versatile training props. With more than 60 drill towers installed, the Affordable Drill Tower comes in several configurations and comes standard with a standpipe system. Choose from one or two sets of stairs, place it against your connect boxes or multi-story access, or freestanding on a slab. All models are NFPA 1402 compliant and gain you ISO credit. The only thing that you can't do on an Affordable Drill Tower is live fire training. You can pump and roll using the Affordable Standpipe Prop. Roll your Affordable Standpipe Prop into the classroom for standpipe theory, and then you roll it into the parking lot and pump realistic flows and pressures. It comes with up to 7 standpipe valves that can be upgraded to PRVs, and the Affordable Bailout Prop allows you to practice window bailouts, ladder high points. Only 5 feet wide, 7 feet long, the Affordable Bailout Prop can roll under any 12-foot overhead door, so you can train on the apparatus bay floor or in the parking lot. Call Steve, 844-55-TOWER, or drop an email to info@affordabledrilltowers.com. Firefighter safety and accountability starts with being able to quickly find and identify individual firefighters operating on the fire ground. Identifier Safety combines the best in photoluminescent materials for durable firefighter identification solutions that can glow for up to 20 hours. No switches, no batteries, which means being able to rapidly identify firefighters by name, unit, or assignment, even under hot fire conditions. All specifically designed and tested for the rigors of the job. Be seen, on scene. Identifiersafety.com. So there we go. Of course, Kehoe's, always the OG sponsor of the Scrap. Kehoe's, check them out on Facebook and at Kehoe's.com. So there we go. Got the sponsors done. Got my technical issues done. And we're ready to scrap. So let me catch you up real quick on the chat, because there's been a ton that I missed as I messed with stuff. Here we go. Let's go. Vigilante's locked in. Get in, sit down, shut up, and hang on. LFG from Jim Platt. John Shackelford said, Doc is in the house. Cody Brooks said, checking in from Florida. Jordan Thomas says, Ohio Township Fire is watching. Marco Isom said, let's do this Monday Night Raw with Chief Ashby. Chuck Hennis said, seen Chief at Teeks. It was the best class. Filled up a page with notes and laughed for days. So, and there's no pressure, like, from all this hype. No pressure at all. Chuck Chuck Hennis said, one is one of the best leadership classes I've ever taken. David Christie says, Chief Ashby is the best. There's so much praise for Chief Ashby. So there you go. I hope you're hyped. Let's get right into it.
Yeah.
What you do, your specialty, so many people talk about personal development, but you also blend in organizational development. And I love the way you described it when we were researching for the episode. So talk to me about what that looks like, or basically your specialty.
Well, let me take it back to the beginning stages.
Sure.
I'm in my 34th year career. My entire career has been on the street. I've never been in the administration. So it's not that I haven't been asked, and I'm very grateful to and honored to even have my name considered to be part of an administration. But being on the street my entire life, there's a lot of frustrations that I have. And one is, early on, I don't feel that people on the street are ever told or made to feel that they're valued unless they're in a top job in the administration. So part of what I do when I blend the organization and the personal leadership is I go out to the boots on the ground and I tell them, you absolutely are valued. You have more power than you can possibly conceive. And I'm here to flick that switch and try to turn it on, so that they start using that power and try to engage them as more or less a call to action to quiet down the negative naysayers that speak the loudest in an organization that tend to, bring down the morale and things. But I think there's a lot of twisted things that go on, at least in my career, in my experience it has. And part of my message is trying to untwist that. But I only have so long to try to get into people's minds and pull back the Band-Aid, and let's really look at the wounds of the fire service and then figure out how we're going to fix that to be part of the solution. So that's a little bit about why I do what I do. And I don't think anybody's ever come out to us on the street and told us that we'll never work for the perfect fire department. I think we get down, we get in ruts, and we always think the grass is greener on the other side. And sometimes, depending on your organization, it might be. However, for the majority of us, it's not the grass is green on the other side. It's the fact that we are all facing the same identical issues. We just fall short of being part of the solution to those issues. And we hold that in our hands, and we need to unleash that power.
Wow. No, I love it. I love it. No small task either. No small task.
No, it's not.
And what's your typical, I don't want to say typical, but how long, you said you don't have much time to make the impact. What's your, is it a one day, 1 week?
So the short version, the things that I do, like at conference level, such as FDIC,
sure,
is I do a motivational speech that's an hour and 45 minutes, a classroom session. And I just have a very short window of time to, you know, spark that interest. But I do believe the attention span of firefighters is very short. So you got to grab onto them and then give them the nuggets to which when they leave that conference that they can go back and make real change. The expanded version of what I do is organizational problem solving, where I go into an organization such as a ABC fire department, and I go in with the boots on the ground. I tell the administration to stay out of the room, and I ask the boots on the ground, tell me where your issues are as you see them in your organization. And they do. And once they tell me those issues, I break them into crews, and they give me the solutions to those issues. So if it's a career department, I do that across three shifts. I end each day with that motivational speech, and I can shorten it to an hour and 45 minutes, 2 hours, and I can lengthen it to 6 hours if I need to, if I need to do a whole day, because I definitely have the gift of gab.
Right.
And I sit down with the fire chief after those 3 days, and I put everything in the bucket, and I say, now listen, after listening to your people, I can tell you that you have 6 main issues in the organization, but here's 12 to 15 solutions to those issues. And I try to bridge the gap between the administration and the operations division, because I believe that's what's broken in most organizations, especially the fire service, is there's a disconnect from the top to the bottom. And that disconnect is communications. So one of the reasons that I go in and do the problem solving and listen to the people is to try to bridge that gap and give that organization a push out of the rut that they're in. And I leave people with strategies and tactics of how to show up better today than they showed up yesterday.
Right.
That if the administration doesn't do anything with the information I give them, how can they continue to make an incredible impact where they're at, no matter where they are in that organization?
Wow. Man, there's so many questions swimming in my head already. Obviously, like the larger the department, you know, they always heard the analogy of turning a battleship. What's the ideal impact level have you noticed as you've done this? Is there one? Or is it really come down to the culture and leadership that's in place?
I tell you, this originally started out as an officer development class. And about, I would say 8 years ago. And I have massaged it over time to where it's not just officers. It's anybody in that organization, from the youngest, newest recruit, all the way to a 40-plus year fire chief and everybody in between. Now, there were reservations in the beginning. Was I going to be able to connect with the Gen Zs, with the millennials? You know, I really was worried about that coming in from, you know, being one of the veterans now. But I am happy to report the feedback that I get, whether it's a fire chief or whether that's a new recruit. The takeaways that they get from hearing me speak, it's actually shocking to me that people want to hear me speak, but it's the takeaways that they get. And probably the number one feedback that I have heard at fire departments is they continue to talk about it after I leave. And that to me is one of the best compliments that I could get, is that I start that conversation and that conversation continues after I'm gone. So that means they're really talking about how to take that information and have positive change and change the culture.
Love it. I absolutely love it. Everybody in the audience, get your questions in for Candace. Chief Ashby, Dr. Ashby, get them in. Sam is in the chats. He is looking, I think, at every chat, Instagram, YouTube, Facebook. He's even looking at LinkedIn, although I don't think anybody actually watches on LinkedIn, but it's there. But he's grabbing the questions. So if you have questions about how this process works, get them in. I want to dig in and ask a few more things, because you separate, you go in and you spend time with the operations level, the line, the men and women on the line, and you ask them, what's the problem here? With no admin allowed?
Yes.
Wow. And does it take time? Is it usually just a dump fest? Or does it take time to earn their trust, or they look at you with suspicion?
Yeah, I take about an hour in the beginning, maybe a little over an hour, that I come in and do a warm up. I let them know the world in which I came from, how I see the world. I connect with them. I gain their trust, because I only have so many minutes in which to do that. I was worried in the beginning whether or not people were going to trust me in order to talk and open up to me, or were they just going to look at me as a hired gun from the admin?
Right.
But I feel, at least the feedback that I get and the way that they open up to me, it's fun. On the first day that I'm brought in to an organization, the firefighters are like, you know, it's a 4 to 6 hour training. They come into work and they find out, they're like, oh my gosh,
we got
some freaking doctor from Indy coming in to talk to us.
Right.
And then I come in and you can see they're all stiff. They have no idea what it is I'm doing. And by the time I end, they're like, that wasn't what we expected to happen. And they were like, you know, they liked what happened in the discussions that we had. And then on day two, they come in and they're all curious, like they got all this good feedback, because you know what happens on shift change. And then by day three, they're bringing me entire books of problems and they're laying them down like, we're ready to talk.
Let's
just do
this.
Your intro. Yeah.
Nice.
So the word spread through the entire organization. I've been to some organizations that people have called in sick. In the first day, they
right.
ended up coming to the training by the third day because word had spread.
Word had spread. That's
you have got to come in here and listen to what this woman has to say. But I believe it's the connection, the authenticity. I mean, I try to bring that. And at the same time, I really believe that everybody in the fire service needs a swift kick right dead in the ass. I don't care where you're at. I don't care how many years you have on. We all need that from time to time to get us back straight on why we're here and what we're here to do. And everything that I speak about, I have experience at, as far as being one of the negative people, being having an attitude of, you know, why do anything? They don't do anything. Why should
right.
I give a shit? They don't give a shit. Why should I try? They don't try. I've been there, done that. And I finally got to a point in my career that it doesn't matter If I don't have support above me, it does not give me the right not to come into work and support the 15 officers under my command.
Right on.
And so it's got to start and stop somewhere. So it doesn't matter what goes on above you. And I tell my officers, you know, I have your back. And I hope that every one of them knows that. They've been shown that. It might be short-lived. We may all go down like dominoes. But there's not a greater feeling in the world than when your boss has your back.
Woof, woof.
And there's not a worse feeling in the world when your boss doesn't.
Wow.
I'll leave that at there.
No, I mean, I'm telling you, like, that psychological safety is such a linchpin, I think, in my mind. And if you've been under both, you know exactly what we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Brad Knight said, such a boss would work for chief any day. Brian Mendelina said, soundbite, timestamp, 100%, 8:19. Thank you for reminding me, because I'm doing a lot of, I'm multitasking so well and poorly at the same time. 8:19, timestamp. I got your first questions coming at you from the audience. Are you ready, Candace?
I'm ready.
I can't. I don't. You said to call you Candy?
You call me Candy, yeah.
Okay, I'm making sure, because I feel that almost like when I'm talking to Dr. Chief, Battalion Chief, a consultant, I feel almost disrespectful. This one comes from Marco Isom from Facebook, and we do see you, Mark. I do see you, Mark Davidson, with the C. I do see you on LinkedIn. Just so you know, Sam can't chat to you. He acknowledged you, but I wanted to acknowledge you, so thank you for representing. Marco Isom coming at you said, Chief Ashby, how do you define leadership, and what traits make a good leader?
Well, this is one of the things that I do in my class. So I go to a board, and I tell people, the audience, that I want them to think of the best person that they can think of. If I say, this is a really good dude, I want you to think of somebody, whether it's a family member, whether it's a person at church, whether it's a neighbor, whether it's a coworker. Get somebody in your mind that you think is just the best person that you could be around. And then I go to a board and I put good people and I say, they tend to emulate the same traits. What are they? And the audience speaks up. Here they are. You know, here's some of them. And now I'll go, depending on how big the audience is, it could
right.
be 10 or it could be 30. But integrity, you know, with that honesty, trustworthy, hardworking, positive attitude. So we have all of these attributes that are, you know, and we all agree collectively as a group that this is what a good person looks like. And then I tell them there's as many definitions on leadership as there are books written on the topic. We don't want anything more than the boss that we report to be the best person. To be this person right here that we have on the board, these traits, we want them to be a good person. If you're a boss, you don't want anything more than the people to report to you to emulate those same traits right there. And if you're not either one, you're not in a position of authority, you're just a backstepper, you don't want anything more than that fellow backstepper to emulate those traits right there. So I don't define leadership, but I show the audience what a leader is. And that is coming in and being the best person you can be every single day. Now, what with that, I say, would you do anything in the world for these people? And I get overwhelming, yes, I would. Well, why would you? Because they would do the same thing for us. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Do these good people have bad days? Yes, they do. They just don't typically stay down. They pick themselves back up. The biggest question of all, do they make you want to be better just being in their presence? Does it make you want to be better? Overwhelmingly, yes, that's what I get. And I said, and they're not even trying. All the reason that you want to be better and to be around these people is the way they carry themselves, the way they conduct themselves. This is the humanity of leadership that's coming out. I mean, what leadership is influence. And how you get that influence is through the building of trust, and how you have that trust is through relationships, none of which you can build without those traits right there, because that's the only way that you can build trust with another person. With that, I go down the opposite road, and I say, let's look at the fire department asshole. What do those traits look like? They're negative. They blame people. They're egotistical. They're arrogant. They're just a negative, condescending person. It may be a good person. Their attitude is just in a tank. But when you look at them side by side on this board, it's truly the opposite of a good person. If we changed all those traits, we would flip that chart and make it the fire department asshole. Now, every organization has those people. So let me take this a step further, even though I just answered your question about
I love it.
Is those negative people. These are the people that you could literally walk in and hand them a $100 bill, and they're not going to be happy that it's not $200. They're going to find a way to complain and bitch. So I call that, and I ask the audience, and all the audience I've asked, if you had to give me a percentage in your organization of how many people at the bottom are negative, what would it be? The common answer I get is 5 to 10%. So I say, okay, let's take 10%. If the 10% of the people are negative and only they know who they are, I don't know who they are. This is what I need. I need the 90%, which are the good people that don't sit around and bitch and complain. And they may at times, but it's not really what they're groomed to do. I need the 90% to take away the audience of the 10%. Because that 10% is what's really killing the fire department right there. But they are conditioning other firefighters to believe that everything rests on the shoulders of the fire chief. And I'm not here to take up for any fire chiefs. I'm really not. There's good ones, and there's some that's not so good. Same way with firefighters, same way with paramedics. But we are conditioned to believe, well, everything in the fire department that's wrong, we're going to blame the fire chief. Morale's down, we're blaming the fire chief. And I'm saying, guys, stop blaming the fire chief, because if you're sitting back waiting on one person to come to the top of this organization and save it, you're going to be waiting your entire career, because it'll never happen. It doesn't work. An organization doesn't work like that. We have to all be together as one team. And instead, we've had people go before us that's made us believe it's only the top that can move the organization. Well, the top does set direction, but that commitment comes from the bottom. And if they don't commit because they don't trust and they don't have that relationship building, where do we go? We go around and around in circles of Groundhog Day, and we're stuck in the mud, and we can't move that organization 5 foot down the road. And that's what we need to do.
What a great answer, Candace. Absolutely. I love the write down a good person on the board, because that is so, that anybody can identify with that instantly. I mean, that's one of the best simplifications, and I mean that in a complimentary way. I hope you take it as a compliment when I say that is one of the best answers I've heard to describe the qualities of a leader.
Well, and that's what I try to get down to, you know. And I've seen that, I've read articles where people believe it's more than just being a good person. Yes, in context it is. You need the competency to go with it that's in your, you know, line of work.
Sure.
But let's just get down to the simplistic level that we all need to work on, and that's what it means to lead by example. Is how in the world you carry yourself and the attitudes that you have every single day. And I will say this, and then I'll go back to the questions. The daily struggle that I believe happens for every firefighter in the country is to fight and resist the temptation to say, screw this place. Once they get that attitude, and I've had it for years, once you adopt that attitude, how good are you going to be when you walk into that station every single day? If that is your mentality, you've just done yourself a disservice and everybody around you, all your brothers and sisters, a disservice, because that mentality is going to guide your decision making and your actions from there on out. So if I had that and everything that happens to me, and I was like, you know what, screw this place, then how good of a battalion chief would I be for my people?
Wow. No, I love it. Man, what a great answer. I've got so many timestamps already. 819, 825, 827, 820. I love it. Next question coming at you from the audience. This comes from John Velez Jr. He wants to know, what is the most common issue the boots on the ground have with administration, and what has been the solution? Which I think you've already been talking about a little bit with the communication issue, but I'll let you answer it in your own words.
John, I'll give you six. I'll give you the top six. Number one, the lack of communication. Number two, the lack of accountability. Number three, the lack of direction. Number four, the lack of good quality policies and procedures. Number five, the lack of good quality training. And number six, the lack of leadership development. Now, those are the biggest issues plaguing every organization. Number one, first and foremost, the foundation of all of it is communication. I believe that disconnect happens, personally, my opinion, is because the people in the admin and the people on the street look through two totally separate lenses in the fire service. The first one is people in the admin, they only hear from the 10% because the 10% speak the loudest. So they hear all the negative stuff coming up to them. And they tend to blanket all of us as a bunch of chronic whiners and crybabies. And that pisses me off because I don't feel that I am one, but also I feel you guys aren't listening. Knock, knock at the top. It's a glass wall. They can see us, but they can't hear us. At the same time, let's flip it back to the guys on the street. There's two people we blame for everything. The first one is the fire chief or administration. We'll put them in the same category. And the second one is millennials. If we would just eliminate those two, we would eliminate all the problems in the fire service. And that simply is not true. But, let me say this.
Okay.
And that's everything that I just said that's an organizational issue from top to bottom happens at the company level first. Because you have plenty of officers out there that don't talk to their people. They don't hold their people accountable. They don't give them any direction. They don't give them any training. They don't follow the policies and procedures. So where does it start and where does it stop? So we can blame the people at the top, but the people at the top came from the people at the bottom. And that's the reason my class is called Leadership from the Bottom Up. I don't, you know, you may or may not, I hope you like your fire chief, but if you don't, what are you doing to change it? Because every single day you walk into firehouse, you're mentoring the future of your organization, the future lieutenants, the future firefighters, the future captains, the future chiefs. When are you going to start changing it?
Mm.
So,
that's a little too introspective for me at the moment.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, Preston Lyons coming at you. I don't get to vet these questions, so I don't even know what's coming at you. Like sometimes when I have the bandwidth, I read them while you're talking, but I'm absolutely absorbed in what you're saying. Chief, what is your advice on convincing command staff that they should bring you in? I imagine they would need to really check their ego for them to even want to connect with you.
Well, that is true. I do get a lot of requests, and I am very busy, but usually it takes the admin to get on the phone and hear me speak. And I tell them, I do not sugarcoat it. I tell them the truth. And if they are not prepared to hear the truth, then do not waste either one of our times. I will not come in because that will actually be a disservice to the people on the ground because it gets their hopes up, and then the admin doesn't do anything with it. But if they truly, and I don't know a fire chief out there that doesn't want to make their organization better. And in order to do that, you know, one of the reasons that I do what I do is because all of us on the street, we all know where the problems are at. And we know what the problems are with Car One. The problem is none of us tell Car One. And the reason is because we're in a politically charged bureaucracy that we work in, and we're in fear of retaliation. Or we don't want to hurt their feelings. We don't like confrontation. So when I come in and ask what these problems are, one, I don't tell a fire chief really anything they don't already know. I just do it from an outside perspective and say, start listening to your people. The caveat of what I do, and they listen, the places that I've been do listen to what I have to say, but it's like, guys, and I tell them, I've never been in the admin. I'm not in your shoes. And there's a reason that I'm not there. But, you know, in my own opinion, the thing is, you're going to somebody on the street to help you fix your department. That's my whole point. The people on the street have the answers. We just got to figure out how to tap that value sitting at the bottom of the organization and let them rise up. If I was in an admin, that's exactly where I'd go, is the boots on the ground to help me run that organization. But we're just trained to do this top-down hierarchy of, you know, the span of control and this chain of command, but we don't understand how to use the chain of command.
Wow. No, I love it, man. There you go. I don't know. Ryan Allison coming at you. Have Chief talk about how the not the loudest 10% speak for the silent majority. You touched on it, so I'm going to the next one. Chief, do you see a correlation in your research between mental health and poor leadership? Or the poor leadership causing mental health issues?
Yes, I do, and I would have to defer that to Dina Ali, the chief at Raleigh, because her work is outstanding, and she just done an EFO paper on how the connection between leadership and mental health. But I absolutely think that it is at the forefront. The poor leadership, people that got promoted that should have never got promoted, we all have them. But what do we do with them? You know, it's high time that we train them the right way and we hold their ass accountable. And until that happens, until we have somebody come in and put their foot down, I don't know if a whole lot's going to change in the mental health. Now, I'm not in that side of things as far as speaking about it. I've had, you know, my own issues and things like that. But it's like, where do you go? There's two things I won't allow in my battalion. And one of them is being an asshole, and the other one's drama. I'm too old for that shit. Get it out of here. I don't need it. But I would not allow one of my officers to be an asshole to somebody else. If they did, I would come out there and I'd put my foot right square on them, because we don't have time for that stuff. We have got to lift people up, not tear them down. I think when we don't have the accountability, that leads personally to a lot of the mental health issues, because people don't know where to go. They don't know what to do when nobody's being held accountable. It's just like the infamous question, what do I do when I have a poor boss above me? Well, you know what? It sucks. I've had plenty of them. And there's not a whole lot personally you're going to do about it except learn what not to become. And then, you know, get the time on the job, get smarter, get wiser, get that knowledge, soak it in, and then get your ass in a promotional process. Just don't do it too young. That's one of the things that I said at the recent conference that I was at. Somebody asked a question about if you could go back and give yourself one piece of advice.
Right.
And I thought about that for a second, and I was like, man, what would I tell myself? And I really think I got promoted too young. I got promoted with I was between 5 and 6 years on the job. And that's common. But I think looking back at it now, I was young, I was dumb, I didn't have the training, I didn't have the knowledge necessary. And I believe in looking back at it now, I caused a lot of damage. And let me give you a description of how that was. I worked at a department that people wouldn't help each other pick up the hose. That when the chief told you it was time to go, you got your ass back in the engine and you left the scene. And there's been plenty of times that I was a lieutenant and a captain, and they told us to leave, and we are getting back on the engine and we're blowing the exhaust on the guys that's still there on the scene, and we're laughing as we're leaving that scene, because we got to leave first and we didn't have to pick up a stitch of hose. I work at a department now that when it comes time to pick up hose, there's 50 people behind that engine. And that's what the brotherhood is about. And I can tell my guys, hey, you guys can mark in, you can go in service. They're like, all right, chief, thanks. You know what they do? They go to the apparatus, they hit the in-service button, they grab their gloves, they go right back, and they help their brothers pick up the hose. There's the difference. And can you imagine the damage that I caused teaching the young people and the people around me that it's okay to leave that scene without picking up that hose, because I didn't have the mentors to show me. I was just following along with the rest of the crowd. And how incredibly sad that is to say now, all these years later, looking
right
back.
Woo. Yeah, the tale of two stories. I mean, yeah, it's just, I love it. I love the personal example and the ownership, man. So much. And I always tell the guests this, but there's so many comments right now about what you're saying that I can't even touch. Just commenting on your commentary. So when you get a chance, go back and see it. It is very, but I'll stick with the questions. If you're watching on Instagram, I realize Instagram is freezing. Instagram is one of the worst places to try and do this stuff. We try, but it is what it is. So I do apologize if it's freezing up on there, but there's not much we can do about it. So that being said, watch it on YouTube, watch it on Facebook. On the other side of Josh's question, this is Caleb Pyle coming at you from Instagram. He says, what is the biggest issues that administration has with the firefighters on the floor? And I know they're part of the same six, but what do you commonly hear going back downwards?
Well, I think that the people in the administration, they get frustrated because they're trying to follow, you know, OSHA and ESO or ISO and accreditation and everything, and they're wanting to check the boxes, and they're not getting, you know, one, they get frustrated because we on the street do not open our email. There's the number one frustration. We sent that email out. Nobody's out here reading it. No, you're right. No. Nothing's been interesting to make us open that email up. So that's a part of the communication nightmare. The other part is I think the admin just view us all as not wanting to do anything. And now that being said, I think sometimes we are our own worst enemy when it comes to that, because we figured out how do we continue to make more and more and more money to do less and less and less work. And so we've kind of shot ourselves a little bit in the foot, but it's the mentality of the people, not all, but some people in the administration that go in there. Now, the reason I think this is a good spot for me to put in why I don't want to be part of administration.
Okay.
Because I've sit back and I've watched it my entire career. People go into admin. I think the majority of people go in there with a grandiose idea that they're going to put a positive spin or an impact on their organization. Then they get there and they find out that there's not enough time in the day because they are doing the job of 10, 15, 20 people. So they didn't get to go in there and do what they wanted to do because everything's slow as molasses. But now they're being pulled in so many different directions because there's only a few running a multi-million dollar organization. So where did the training come from that they got to go in that administration? They didn't. So now they're learning. There's a huge learning curve there. It's easy for them to say to us on the street, we don't have time to train you. You have no idea what we're going through. And you wouldn't understand it unless you're in the admin. Oh, I understand it. I understand it big time. That's why I don't want to be there. But the thing is, why would I want to go in? This is one of my questions. Why would I want to go in to an administration and bust my ass every day, day in and day out, to make that organization better so that people on the street can tell me what a piece of shit I am because I'm in the administration? So there's another disconnect in what causes friction between the top and the bottom. Now, that being said, I believe the company officer is more powerful than any fire chief in existence because that company officer has the power to walk into a firehouse where the majority of the organization lives and say, shut the hell up and turn it around and start doing the job right. But they don't. Instead, they're usually part of the problem, and that trickles upward to that administration, and they just have this biasness, I'm going to say, is, you know, where they can see us, but they can't communicate with us. They don't think that we're smart enough to hear what they've got to say. They're frustrated with us because they see that we don't do the things that they need to, that they want in the timeline that they want them on. It's because that communication factor, we're not sold on it. It's like we could care less what the accreditation stickers are on the side of our truck. We don't care about that on the street. They care about that in the office, but not for us. So there's that disconnect because we need to do a better job at understanding what that sticker gets us. Does it get us more money? Do we bring in more trainings? Can we bring in Corley Moores and Sean Duffy's and Rob Backers into our organization because now we can apply for grants? If we started understanding more on putting ourselves in the other person's shoes, the top two. Now, I already said the top came from the bottom. And it's easier for them to say, well, I was out there. I'm telling you, right, you forgot where you came from very quickly. Take a vacation day. Hell, I take 3 days off, and I come back, and I forget what it's like on shift work. I'm like, damn, it's my first day back, you know. And you go in an office for a few years, you forget what it's like on the street. And that we have got to do a better job at emphasizing on both sides. And I tell the guys on the street, you know, I'm not taking up for people in the admin. I think everybody deserves a kick in the ass, but we've got to look at it. There's only a handful running that multi-million dollar organization, and there's not enough time in the day. And I think that's part of the reason that they don't have time to come out and connect with us in the street. But what? Why can't the fireman pick up the phone and say, hey, chief, we're having this for lunch. You want to come and join us? And bring that chief out to them instead of waiting for the chief to do it. You know, and that's, we got to break those barriers down if we're going to better our organizations and change the cultures.
Love it. I mean, I got some questions coming at you, some good questions that I want to get your take on. One is from Christopher Armiger. He wants to know, Chief, have you spoke to many agencies that are union? What advice do you have to offer to agencies who use their collective bargaining or their union as the voice between Florida admin and supersede the role of the COs and BCs in problem solving, where it's kind of shoehorned its way in there?
I'm union. I've always been union. I was raised in a union house. My dad was UAW and my brothers were Teamsters. I've been part of the union from day one. I luckily work in a very strong union organization, and our collective bargaining and our labor negotiations is unfreaking believable. I make the money that I make today and I get the benefits that I get because of the union. However, I think we need to draw that line in the sand of what the union's for. So when I come in and do problem solving, I make it very clear that I'm not there for labor negotiations. If it has to do with money, time, you know, time off, that's what the union's there for. But when it comes to fixing organizational issues, we can do that as human beings without the union. I mean, everybody should be union, but like in Indiana, it's a right to work state. So not everybody is union.
Right.
But we have got to have that decision-making, that critical thinking, that higher level of thought process to start solving problems. And if we start solving them at the bottom, my Lord, could you imagine? Like, we get mad when the administration gets involved with it, with the, something that happens in the firehouse, but why did it ever get there?
Right.
Because somebody didn't do their damn job sitting on the bottom. They stepped out of the way and let that shit get to the top. And that should be, there's stuff that should have been kept in the firehouse. We are all adults. But then we have the moles and everything else that want to run everything up to administration. Well, we need people up there that says, you know what? You got an officer. You got a chief. Get your ass back down there and get them to solve it. And when you tried everything and you can't do it, then come to me. But we have gotten into a rut where we don't want to use open, honest communications and have difficult conversations. And that's another element that I'm trying to bring that I think for me personally, it's becoming a grandma. You know, I tell my grandkids, pull your head out of your ass and act like you got some damn sense. And I found it to be very effective in the firehouse to say nice. That, not throwing paper on people, just saying, what was that? Get that out of here. You know, come on. I don't allow that in a battalion. Let's go on. Oh, sorry, chief. Let's go. And you give people a mulligan just by talking to them. You can correct so much, but it's when we don't want to talk and we want to throw paper and we want to throw things around, that doesn't do anybody any good.
Mm. Okay, second one. I love it. I love it. This comes from Stephen McCaffrey. Bull, question. In this leadership vacuum we have in the fire service, you mentioned mentoring the next leaders as number 6 of the most common problems. How do you start a captain, BC, DC, or chief program so we break this cycle for the next generation? Also, I'm going to have to listen to the scrap a few times. I can't write fast enough. So, yes, absolutely. But go ahead.
So how do we start? The question was, how do we start?
Basically, officer development. I mean, that's basically the crux of the question.
All right. Well, first off, this is what I believe. I believe we're missing the critical classes that are needed out here. I think there's a few people, such as Alan Brunicini, that had brought years ago a book called Customer Service. And where's it been? I mean, he wrote the book, and obviously, you know, rest in peace, but where are our customer service classes at? There is a lot of leadership classes out there that's like individually focused. How can I be a better leader? But where are the management 101 classes? And there's plenty of things out there on Facebook and social media that says, oh my gosh, I don't want to be a manager. I want to be a leader. And because you manage things and you lead people, that is true in context. However, leadership is about influencing another person. What happens? I want to be a leader also. I want to be a great leader. But what happens when I go to work and I run into somebody that doesn't want to be inspired? Then what do we do? When they say, screw you and your leadership horse that you're on, then what do we do? Well, we got a whole bunch of officers out here that don't understand management 101. That's when I have to turn my hat around and become a manager. That's called being a boss. Now, I know Chase Sargent's book, Buddy to Boss, and it's a great, great manual and a book. And there's people out there that profess you can't be a buddy, you can't be a boss. Well, you've got to develop relationships. You got to build trust. But, you know, you don't even know I'm the battalion unless you just happen to know it when you walk in. But I'm friendly and I want to be friends with everybody. But I also am very comfortable in drawing the line in the sand of being the boss when I need to be the boss. And I don't sugarcoat it. So we need more classes on management. We need classes on leadership. We need classes on organizational leadership, because we don't understand, when we become better leaders, how does that affect the organization and organizational behavior? We need effective communication classes. We need classes on how to delegate to other people, how to motivate people. Here's a big one, conflict management. Where are those classes at the fire service? Because anytime you have human beings together, you're going to have conflict. But how do we manage that? And when do we let it go? And when do we step in, our catalyst? Human interpersonal relations, where are those classes at? We don't have interpersonal relations classes because that's fundamentally rooted in communication. And how many firefighters have taken effective communications in the fire service? Not talking about fire ground communication, right, but just how to connect. Decision-making, critical thinking, the different generations, how do we deal in that? How do we deal in driving cultural change and performance improvements? Our team, here's a big one, team building. Everything we do in the fire service, we do as teams. But how many team building classes are there? And how often do they go on to continue to build high-performing teams? Risk management's another one. Project team management. Now, let me pause on this one for a second. This is IE committees. So people go up in this, talk about the organizational vacuum of the office. And sometimes it sucks the brain cells out of people. And with all due respect, they want to have a committee. You want to buy a set of fire gloves? Go form a committee. That's administration's way of getting our input on the street. But what really happens is you go to FDIC or another fire conference and you walk in and say, well, I just saw these great gloves and I want to be part of that committee. And then you find out it's all smoke and mirrors and the highest ranking person gets what the hell they want. And then you don't get in any more committees after that. So then we lose that. But here's the thing. Where is the project team management training? We're not even trained how to work in a committee. So how in the world, why, you see why we're so dysfunctional? We're not trained to how to do it right, how to run a meeting. You know how many unproductive employee gatherings I've set in and say, what the hell was that?
Right.
You know, they still go on today, right? The use of power and how to use it to move that ball forward. We, you know, power itself has a negative connotation to it. But man, once you understand the power that you hold in your position and the good that it can do, it changes the world. Budgeting, labor negotiations, how to coach somebody. Where are those classes at? So those are all the classes that I feel that we're missing in officer development that we need to start getting to. And when we have that, that's, you know, the accountability. Why don't we have accountability in fire service? Nobody knows. So right now I'm designing a class on how you discipline somebody and make it stick, you know, nice, the right way.
How close is that one? How close is that one?
Well, right now I'm I'm right in the middle of my own discipline, so I'm speaking from experience. But
right
I'm
on.
Like, this is not how you do it. You don't. You got to quit. You know, going to this freaking book, thinking that this book's going to give you all the answers. Sometimes you have to have common sense. You can't find that shit in a book. You know, it's when you deal with somebody. And we've lost it. We just think, oh, if it's not in this book, we can't function. You know, it's like, I'm sorry, Lord. I got on a roll.
I love it. No, Jim Platt summed it up. He said, Jim Platt, I lost it. It just scrolled by. Too many sound bites. Holy smokes.
Love you, Jim.
But he actually said, can we timestamp this entire scrap? And that pretty much sums it up. I mean, it really does. New t-shirt from Michael Ramirez said, new t-shirt. You can't find that shit in the book. No, absolutely crush it. I can't even keep up with the scrolling of the comments. You have to go back and read them. Where was I at? Man, hits a little too close to home. Great question, Bull. Thank you for that awesome question. All the questions tonight have been on point, and I think it has to do with the quality of the guest. Rob Backer coming at you. You mentioned him earlier, but Rob Backer, Art of Reading Smokey's in here. He asked you, Chief, when dealing with the individual who thinks they're the good person, but everyone else sees them as the bad leader, what strategies have worked for you to help to see the truth so they can start improving?
Tell them the truth. So when I go to an organization and I do the problem solving, I'll go in organizationally and I'll sit down with the fire chief and say, okay, here's 5 or 6 issues and here's 10 to 12 solutions. And they're like, oh, that's not bad. Oh yeah, we already knew all this. And then I say, you know what? I just sit down with 3 days of your organization and I can tell you what their perception is of you. You want to hear it? 100% want to hear it. Well, yeah, I want to hear it. Can I tell you the truth or do I have to sugarcoat it? No, we want the truth. Okay, you're a micromanager or you're an asshole. I told one chief, I said, you're an asshole. That's the way your guys view it. And you need to scale it back a little bit. You know, you're too rough. You're too gruff. You got to sand those edges off. If we don't tell the people the truth, how are they ever supposed to improve? Now, the reason that I feel that I wasn't always like this. I didn't go in and tell the truth. It's like, oh my gosh, we can't do that. The reason that I can do it today and say, you know what, I don't think you're performing as a rock star, and I want you to be a rock star, is because it comes from a place of love. I want them to be so successful, but if they don't see or understand their own shortcomings, how are they ever going to improve if we tell everybody else but them?
There you go. I mean, it's
Chief Backer, I hope that answered your question, buddy. He's a rock star right there. He just came to my battalion and did smoke reading training, and it was a huge hit.
No, I love him. I love the class.
Yes, I do too. And I tell you, to go back a question on somebody asking about how to change it, you know, here you got Chief Kurt Isaacson out here. He's doing this battalion chief boot camp that he's got going. He sold out for like the next year. That in itself, I haven't been to the training, so I can't speak about the training. That just shows you how bad the people out here want the training. They want the knowledge. They want to get better. They want to understand their jobs more. So I think there needs to be more Kurt Isaacsons out here that are, and I think there are, that's beating the ground. I know Roseberry there in Texas has created a battalion chief academy. That's something I want to do here in the state of Indiana, is I want to create a 1 week, I was talking actually to Chief Backer about it, battalion chief's academy on this is what it's like to be a battalion chief, because most battalions don't understand how they fit between the administration and allegiance to the people and allegiance to the administration. They don't understand that they're stuck in the middle, and they've got to understand how to use that power correctly on both sides.
Wow. I love it, man. I can't wait for the academy, because I'm signing up. I am. Absolutely. I went to one of the early iterations of Chief Ike's week long. It was commanding from the sidelines at the time, and it became Battalion Chief Boot Camp, and it was amazing then, and I'm sure it's only gotten better and heard only good things. Of course, I'm a huge fan of Chief Ike. So I love it. Okay, you want more questions?
Sure.
Candace from Dwayne Ustinik. I hope I got it close to right. Candace, when will you write a book?
When I can find time. I need that. I have so many thoughts in my head of books to write. I don't even know where to start. I actually got to start writing some articles. I'm terrible at writing because I'm so incredibly busy going to department to department to department around this country that it is. I'm still trying. It's hard for me to say no, because usually I get the plea from a fire department like, we need your help. And if I feel that I have something in my message that can help pull them, even their people, out of the rut, to say, quit being, you know, there's two options. You can either be bitter or you can be better. But the one thing that I find too often is people that are stuck in the past. What happened last week, last month, last year, what the previous administration done to them. They got promoted, they got demoted, they got this, they got that. Let the shit go. It's in the past. I'm sorry, whatever happened, believe me, I've had plenty of ups and downs myself. But you've got to make that decision that today's a new day, and you cannot embrace the future with a past mentality like that, that you're stuck. So get over it. Let's go. That administration's gone. Or maybe it's the current administration, but guess what? I'm going to prepare the next generation right now. So when these guys are out, the next one's ready to go in, and they actually get the growth and development of people.
Love it. There you go, man. Jeff Burns Sr. coming at you. What are the three things to consider when rebuilding the structure of a department that has poor leadership? You get to rebuild it. That's pretty powerful.
Well, first and foremost, communications, accountability, those are your first two. And you got to get the right people on the bus. And not only the right people on the bus, but the right people got to be in the right positions on that bus. And I say that because I just saw a post on Facebook recently, and it was out of Orlando. And it was a two-alarm fire that they had, and the fire chief was acknowledging Chief Walt Lewis, saying he's done a perfect job on this fire. Well, there you go. You got the right person and the right job, and that's when everything clicks. If you got to rebuild an organization, you got to rebuild it from the bottom up. You got to get the people ready below the people that are there because they're on their way out the door typically. And you got to get the ones that, and that's going right after the heart of any organization, which is the strength of the company officers. And we have got to get them better. We got to get them the knowledge and the training. I think most of it is just a fundamental training issue. I don't think it's bad people. I just don't think they know any better. I used to blame so many people, like, you know, I'd never want to work for this guy or that guy. And I don't agree with a lot of things above me, but I think it's a fundamental training issue. I honestly do. So how do we fix that? We start doing the right stuff and showing people it doesn't have to be like this. It can be like, you know, what we need it to be. And going out, and that's what these young people want. Man, I have never in my life seen firefighters so hungry and thirsty for knowledge and training as these millennials and Gen Zs. And they're coming in much smarter at a much younger age than what we were. And instead of blaming them, we got to give it to them. And you got a lot of greats out here that are doing it. But that's, you know, we've got to keep that going because there's a huge disparity right now in the fire service. There's your veterans, there's a big gap, and then there's young people. So most fire departments that I go to, like, oh my gosh, the majority of our department's under 10 years, and they don't have the experience, they don't have the depth of knowledge, the breadth of knowledge. Give it to them. Figure out ways that we can do peer-to-peer mentoring, that we can pull that information out of these old guys. And sometimes it takes another old guy going up and smacking him upside the head and say, what are you doing? You know, I had a 37-year veteran come into my battalion, the other battalion I was in, and he came in for the last 12 hours of overtime. He was on the drop. He was ready to retire. And I looked out the window, and he's sitting out there in the bay with every compartment door open, showing that probationary firefighter around it, saying, this is what you grab tonight, that this is what we get. And I'm like, man, how do we reproduce more of that right there instead of the entitlement? You know, when you say, well, entitlement, we think of millennials. I can show you entitlement in every single generation. The people think, well, I've earned it. I can just come in and sit down and not do anything. And look at the number of people that 25, 30 years that don't think they have to take another class. You know, I took strategy and tactics back in 1990. Guess what? That shit's changed.
Yeah. You know,
if I just go based on my experience in my health, you know, the other two shifts, they get fires every day. Me, it doesn't happen every day. So I've got to go get it somewhere else.
Right. Right. Love it. Man, I'm telling you, I quit writing down timestamps because Jim Platt said it best. Just timestamp the entire thing. It's going to be hard to pick one. Sam even chimed in and said, I've seen a lot of scraps. I don't know if this isn't the best ever. And I know I have a recency bias. I have a ton of friends that I consider close friends come on here, and I love them because of my love for them. This has been phenomenal. I mean, phenomenal. Again, you have to check out all the stuff they're saying about you. Rob Fisher said, agreed, Sam. David Stepp with the clapping hands, boom. David Stender, oh, yes, the ones that don't think they need to keep learning. Yes, 100%. So much good stuff. Let me get one more question at you before I go to some of my other stuff. I'm trying to see. I've got a bunch of questions here to choose from. What is the best advice? Let's go with Chief. Have you noticed a difference? This comes from Caleb Pyle. Last one from Instagram. Chief, have you noticed a difference in morale at departments in which fire chiefs have risen through the ranks versus comparison to outside hires? In your opinion, is there, have you anecdotal data on that at all?
I don't have the data on that, only my personal experience that I've experienced both of where I've been. And it just, you know, it really just depends on that organization, the size of that organization. Has the well been poisoned or has it not? I don't typically like personally, you know, in the organizations that I've been a part of, going to the outside. But at some point, sometimes they don't have a choice. If it just depends on that organization. But no, to answer the question, I don't have the data to support one or the other. But right. I do know there's a lot of people out here that do jump around department to department as fire chiefs. And that's common, not any, you know, not good or bad or indifferent, but it's like, you got to put your foot down and plan them into an organization to help that organization to grow. And if we have outside people coming in, not to say that they're bad, but if we don't think they're there long-term, we're not going to invest in them.
Right.
We're going to say, this is just your next stepping stone. And that there creates another difficult thing that we have to get past, basically. And we got the people on the inside. Can they think outside the box? Can, you know, if their only their only experience has been that organization and they've been pipelined up, can they grow and look at things from a 1,000-foot perspective and take other people's, you know, opinions into that? And I think when we have people that understand the value that the people at the bottom bring and we connect that organization, if that comes from the inside, hallelujah. If it has to be an outsider bringing it in, that's fine. And the only one I could think of, or the greatest example I could think of, is Scott.
Right.
The Colony.
Enough
said on that one. He's taken that organization and ran with it.
Right
and
on.
That wasn't a homegrown thing for him. So
right.
So it just depends on the person and the situation. Get that right mix.
Love it. All right. All right. It's freezing up. Chief, you did freeze up a little bit there, but it looks like it smoothed out. But the gist of it got across. So I'm going to move to one of my favorite questions I love asking. Book or books that you think firefighters should be reading? I'm a huge reader, so I'm always getting my reading list from my guests. But so go, and it doesn't have to be firefighter related. It's whatever you think.
Okay. Probably if I had to pick one that was my favorite that was outside the fire service, it's Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill.
Hill.
And it is back in the 1920s where he goes around and asks people, how did you get rich? And it was a mentality. That's the perspective. That's the power of the mindset, the attitude that each of us have. And that is the foundation in which I built leadership from the bottom up. So Think and Grow Rich. I really like Colin Powell's It Worked for Me in Life and Leadership. I think there's some awesome takeaways in that. I mean, I like the books of Maxwell and Stephen Covey and Simon Sinek and things, but those, they have their place. But ones that really, truly connect where you can move you, and I can't say enough. I mean, I like everybody's books, but I can't say enough about Frank Leeb's Leadership, because he built that book off pure experience and his taking it through. And I loved it because I connected thinking, I feel, and I told him this in Orlando, I said, I feel that you and I are at the same spot, but we took totally different roads to get there. He had mentors, I didn't. I had to fight and scratch my way to get to the end basis that I'm at now. And I really wish I had those mentors early on.
Love it. Absolutely. Love the books. Every one of them, absolutely. And so this brings us to the five questions for firefighters. This is the third, actually it's version 3.3 of the five questions for firefighters. Basically, answers are 100% your opinion, and the points are arbitrary, passed out by me with the help of the audience. So the way you kick it off is to ask you, are you ready for the five questions for firefighters version 3.3?
Yeah.
Are you there?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. It's getting choppy. I don't know if you're getting cut off on your data plan or. but we'll go with it. We'll see. It's been amazing scrap, so I hope we can finish strong. Number one, what is the skill that has carried you through your fire service career?
How to deal with adversity. And how that you can take that and make you stronger.
So not just dealing, but also overcoming.
Oh yeah, yeah. You definitely, absolutely. Yeah. You got to take it in stride. So it doesn't matter what comes against you. You got to find the positive in. You know, it's like I was saying earlier. Like I'm going through a disciplinary issue right now. So guess what? I'm going to have a discipline class come out of that. So there's going to be a positive come from that.
Nice.
That hopefully will impact, make positive impact in the world, and that's what we got to start looking to do.
Wow. No, absolutely love it. Max points, easy max points. That Steve Mouch said all right off the gate. I'll say it now, max points, even before you started. So premature max points, but absolutely max points. I love the overcoming adversity. I love the personal example of saying something good's coming out of this. Number two, it's job town. It's time. You're in route and responding. You got to think of the scene from Backdraft where he slaps that cassette deck into, or that cassette tape into the deck. What song are you playing while in route?
From Ohio Players.
Oh, I lost you. You got to say it again.
Fire from Ohio in Backdraft. It's the fire. You know, it's the it's what they're playing in Backdraft. I think it's Ohio Players.
Ohio Players.
Fire.
Fire.
Yeah, I think that's the name of it. Yeah, that's it. Yep.
Okay. No, you're getting very choppy. So what's it called? Interpreting the choppiness. I'm interpreting. We're going to try and make it through.
Okay.
Maybe make it through. Number three, what is your favorite fire service tradition, not including the firehouse kitchen table?
Family time. And I say that, you know, the guys doing things that build teamwork, like dish games. So it's not sitting at the table. It's what comes after. Sitting outside, having a movie on Friday nights, things like that, the family time.
I love it. Bumper time, park bench, all that kind of stuff, picnic table out front, et cetera.
Yep.
I love it. Cigars, if it's 15 feet away from the door especially.
Yeah.
Meeting all those federal
shirts. I personally like shirts and skins and basketball.
We go to number four, and you got max points, by the way, 1, 2, and 3. The choppiness has seemed to smooth out, so we'll finish up strong. And this one is on the clock. So let me make sure I'm doing this right. Yeah, get to the right place. Who are the you get 1 minute to answer. We had to put a clock on it. No honorable mentions. You get four people to put on your Mount Rushmore of the fire service, and go.
Alive or dead? Does it matter?
You're Mount Rushmore.
Alan Brunicini, Bobby Hulton, Billy Goldfeder, and I'm gonna. I have several names popping through, but I'm going right now with the guy that is just impressing the hell out of me, and that's Chief Jerry Tracy, FDNY.
Boom. 27 seconds. Except for the small hesitation between 3 and 4, you almost had the record for fastest ever.
Ah, there you go.
But that, I mean, it's not that it's a record you want to hold, but
well,
it was very.
Because there's so many people that I want to mention, and you left me till 4, so I have to have the biggest impact on my Mount Rushmore, and I want to help pave the way like these guys are doing.
No, and it's absolutely not a fair question.
Yeah.
Like, absolutely. And 1 minute doesn't make it any better.
Right.
But we had to because it's such a big question. People would talk about it for 20 minutes at a time with honorable mentions and rightfully so. But absolute crushed it on the Mount Rushmore. One of the because there's two directions people go. They go personal, like the people that had the personal impact, or on the fire service. And so very, very, very beautiful. Final question. It is the original question. It's the question that has never changed. It is heavy fire, searchable space. Would you rather be assigned to the nozzle or first in on VES?
Nozzle.
Easy answer.
Somebody's going to put the fire out.
No hesitation whatsoever. There you go. 5 for 5, max points. Easy, easy max points.
Like, my luck, I go into VES and be a 500 pounder.
Got to look.
Okay, come on, boys.
We need some help in here.
Right.
Absolutely crushed it. Absolutely destroyed the 5 questions for firefighters. I'm looking here and saying that officially makes it 239 scraps in the books. Chief Candace Ashby, thank you for being with us and sharing your evening. If someone wants to get a hold of you, what is the best way to do so?
Probably email. It's C Ashby, my first initial, last name, CASHBY, at elitepublicsafety.com. I'll throw that public safety in there, you know, the elitepublicsafety.com, not to do, instead of my fire department email. And then I'm on Facebook as Candace Key Ashby. I have a Elite Public Safety Facebook page. I have a Key Fire Facebook page. My cell phone's on 24/7. The only time I don't answer it is when I'm asleep and it's on Do Not Disturb. I'm in the shower on a shitter. Well, no, I answer it on the shitter too. So
there you go. I'm gonna repeat your email because it was choppy. It's C Ashby, like it looks like cash buy, but C Ashby at elitepublicsafety.com. I wanted to say That's it because it got a little choppy, so I just wanted to repeat it.
Yes, thank you.
Absolutely. Water puts out fire, Max Points. Excellent show. Great scrap. Awesome scrap. Outstanding. Thanks for the family time from Chris Ballou. There you go. That officially makes it 239. Housekeeping here. Go to firehousevigilance.com. Join the vigilantes. $5 a month. You can sign up for a year. We'll be posting a link to the after party. Candace has agreed to come on and be roasted by the vigilantes. We threaten to do it each and every time, but I think she may give as good as she gets. Because they never roast. I mean, I'll be honest with you, but that is what it is. We are a group of like-minded souls. We are never alone. We are the vigilantes. Go become one next week. I don't even have the list up for who's. It is Mike Pascal, man. Mike Pascal. What a battalion chief here at OKC Fire. I get to pick his brain next week. So you don't want to miss it. It's going to be a lot of tactics. A lot of tactics next week.
Awesome.
This is going to be a good one. And that officially does it. We are there. Thank you, Candace, for sharing all. Man, I feel like we could talk for another 2 hours about it and still be scratching
thank
the
you
surface.
For the opportunity. I really appreciate it. This is awesome.
No, it was a killer. That's it, audience. Thank you so much for the questions. I say it like, Candace, please go check out all the comments and all the beautiful love you received from the audience because it was good stuff, and I only got to scratch the surface of it. After party, we'll be posting the link. Sam should be posting it as we speak. Audience, thank you for being here. Thanks for the great questions. You guys ask some phenomenal questions. You make the scrap magical. It would not be what it is without you. It would just be me and Candace talking, which would be fine, but you guys are the secret ingredient that really makes it fun. Remember, mutts don't scrap. I hope the tone stays silent unless it is burning. Stay safe out there.
Thanks for listening to the Weekly Scrap. Please subscribe and please share. We'll see you at the next episode.